You're listening to Jedi and Germs, a weekly podcast brought to you by the Torn by Sports Podcast Network and blogtalkradio.com. I'm Alan Zog, the Jedi. He's John English, the Germs guy. Hey, John.
Hello, Alan.
And how are you this fine Friday morning?
I'm great.
Excellent. Well, and, you know, we're missing out on Devin this week, our wonderful producer, and might as well call him a co-host because he's a big part of the team. We're missing him this week. Devin, sorry you couldn't go with us this week, but we'll look for you next week. So, let's start this off. You sent notes last night. Let's kick it off with the Jazz. I hate recording. I'm going to echo your thoughts. I hate recording after a loss. But here we are recording after a loss.
Yep, that was a wild game. Jazz did not look good in the first half. Third quarter, I thought they had everything under control, and then suddenly in the fourth, they started having these defensive collapses that were very reminiscent of the first half of the game, and it was one of those games where even when it was down to the final few seconds, I thought the Jazz were going to be able to pull it off, and it didn't happen. And it was really disappointing because every game counts, and you know now they've got their 30th loss, so if they're going to get to their 50 wins, then they can only lose two the rest of the way. And if you're going to lose like a road game to Atlanta, then, you know, and they've had other losses like this. They had that loss to Memphis. All these games that we thought would be gimmies, we can't take them as gimmies. No matter how good they look, even four or five games in a row, you know, I think they're just playing in a way that we can expect them to lose another game or two they shouldn't. And I think 50 at this point is going to be tough. I know there's not that many games left, but when you have these nights of inconsistency, it makes me nervous.
Didn't we, and I'm going back to last week's, but didn't we say that this is possibility of being the loss on this week's schedule? I mean, this was the one game I thought the Jazz would lose, or could lose.
Let me back to our road schedule. Of the four road games they were going to have, this was the one where I would have given most likely to drop, just because Trae Young and John Collins, they've been playing well, and Atlanta has just been able to get those last second wins on a few teams. Now, for the rest of the week, this upcoming week, I'm expecting 3-0. They're at Chicago. Chicago's been a disaster, and then they got road home games against Phoenix and the Lakers. And you know, Phoenix will surprise somebody every once in a while, but they're still the worst team in the West. And then the Lakers, they're the worst team in the West the past month. So all of that, everything should be right with the universe again with that. But you can't drop losses to lottery teams anymore.
No, you can't. And in fairness, I'm going to be the optimist here. I still think the Jazz will get to 50. I still believe it. Because you're right. They don't want to lose any games they're not supposed to. I also think they're going to win a couple that you won't expect them to. I mean, they've still got two or three games on their schedule that against Denver, and I can't remember who else, that you could peg as a loss, and I'm just not going to see it. I think the Jazz are going to win.
Why don't we just go over the entire rest of the schedule? Cause it's
yeah, let's do it.
So, at Chicago, and then you have a four-game homestand, and it is the Suns, Lakers, Wizards, and Hornets. Hornets should be competitive. They're fighting for their own playoff seating. Then you have a road game at Phoenix, home game with the Kings, road game with the Lakers, home game with the Nuggets, road game with the Clippers, and that is the rest of the season.
Now, if you want to talk about games they shouldn't lose, that road game against Phoenix is one that I'm looking at that is a possibility. Phoenix has played pretty well over the last month at home on occasion. You know, they've beat up some teams they shouldn't win. or shouldn't beat. So that's not a clear-cut win on the road either. And then you're right, the Clippers and Nuggets. I think the Jazz win one of those two. So in reality, of the final 10, I do think the Jazz only lose two.
Looking at Phoenix, you're right, they have been good at home. They even had a three-game win streak when they had a homestand earlier in the month. They had a wild win against the Warriors. I don't think anyone saw that coming. But, you know, overall they're playing like you expect the Suns to be playing. They had a 17-game losing streak back in February. But after that, they've been playing almost 500 ball, really. Let me think. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. They've been playing exactly 500 ball since their losing streak ended. So Phoenix, you just can't sleepwalk through. You gotta make sure you take care of business with them.
This loss last night hurt. To put it in reality, it does hurt because the Jazz were in fifth seed with a half a game lead on OKC and the Spurs. With that loss, they now fall to a half a game back to both of those teams. And, I mean, you're still three games out of fourth, I think you put in the notes. They were only two games before last night. So, again, that hurts. You had a chance at fourth, although slim. But now you're fighting for fifth seed. And
yeah,
it's not easy.
Yeah, let's go ahead and skip to the projections. And just see what they're looking at. Now, 538, they have the Jazz finishing fifth at 50-32. You know, honestly, when I look at their schedule, I still think 51 wins is achievable.
Yep.
But I just feel like they're going to lose one they shouldn't, and they do wind up 50-32. So 50-32 would put them fifth, according to 538, and that would put them against Portland in the first round. ESPN, they have the Jazz finishing fifth at 49-33. They have a tie between Houston and Portland. And if those two teams tie, Portland has the tiebreaker, and so the Jazz would be facing Houston in the first round. And then Basketball Reference, they have the Jazz finishing fifth at 49-33 with a tie with Portland and Houston, which would again mean they face Houston in the first round.
Okay, explain the tiebreaker with Portland because I'm not sure I understand it.
I just looked at their schedule. Portland, they've only played three times, and Portland's 2-1 against Houston.
No, but I mean the Jazz and Portland, because I thought the Jazz owned the tiebreaker there. I mean, they're tied 2-2, but then the Jazz have a better conference record and division record, I think.
Yeah, but none of those projections have the Jazz tying Portland. The projections that have ties is between Portland and Houston, and the Jazz are still a game or two below them.
Okay, I got you. So, and in reality, you're suggesting the Jazz don't catch Portland, they don't tie with Portland. You're probably right on that, because I don't know that Portland loses more than two games the rest of the way, if that.
Well, let's look at Portland's remaining schedule. And if I remember right, they had a fairly easy schedule to finish it out. So they have two home games against Pistons and Nets. They should win those. Then they have a four-game road trip. Maybe they'll drop one there. It's Bulls, Hawks, Pistons, and Timberwolves. Hawks have been playing well at home, and Pistons are jockeying for playoff position, so who knows there. Home game with Memphis, road game with the Nuggets. Actually, they have a road game and then a home game with the Nuggets. So they have back-to-back games with the Nuggets. So something could happen there. And then road Lakers, home Kings. So I'm seeing at most three losses there. Probably only one or two, though.
If they get three losses and the Jazz can win out, like you said, get to that 51 or 52 wins, 52, suddenly you do have a tie. But that would require the Jazz to win their final 10. I'm not sure that's going
to
happen.
Yeah. To tie Portland, they need Portland to lose three, and the Jazz need to win out. So there's just not a lot of room left in the regular season.
No, there isn't. So, and one final thought on last night's game. I'm with you. the Jazz, their defense broke down late in that game. And the worst part about it is they started missing shots. And with the Jazz, as we've seen over the course of the season, it's a bad trend. You miss shots, you start missing those important shots down the stretch, then you got to rely on your defense. It didn't come through last night. Their defense can win in ball games. It did not last night. And that's where I think they lost that game, was defensively, not offensively. Because you can live with missed shots if you can get stops, and they didn't.
Yeah.
So, any final thoughts on the Jazz? I think that covers everything, doesn't it?
Yeah, that's good.
All right. Moving on to NBA news and notes.
Okay. It's playoff race is shaping up pretty nicely in the East. Bucks have a 2-game lead over the Raptors. Raptors have a 4-game lead over the Sixers. Sixers have a 3.5-game lead over the Pacers. Boston is still half a game behind the Pacers, and Boston hasn't been that consistent, but the fall-off that we expected with the Pacers looks like it's finally happened. They've lost 4 in a row. I do expect Boston to finish with the 4 seed and face the Pacers in – have Pacers in the first round with home court advantage. And then distantly you have positions 6, 7, and 8 with Pistons, Nets, and Heat are in. Magic – and Hornets have a real outside shot, but they need to have some miracles start to happen. You know, Pistons has been playing the best. Heat has suddenly gotten hot. They're 8 of their last 10. So my guess is that you're going to finish with Pistons 6th, Heat 7th, and the Nets 8th. And we might even have – I actually think that Nets are probably – going to finish only like 40 and 42, and we're not going to have that bad a discrepancy. I don't think we're going to have one of those years where the 8th seed is, you know, 38-44 like we usually do.
Is that a sign of things to come? Is the East getting better?
No. No. East 6 through 15 is always so much worse than the West. So, yeah. And then West, it's looking like, well, Warriors still only have a half game lead on the Nuggets. So that's still up in the air. Nuggets have a lot of tough games ahead of them. They do got to face the Jazz. They got to face Portland twice. There's a lot of things that can happen there. Nobody is catching up to second seed though. So between those two on who's going to get first or second, Rockets and Blazers are within a half game of each other, and it is going to be between those two teams who's third and who's fourth. And then 5 through 8 is really, really tight. In fact, currently, there is a 4-way tie for 5th. We have the Thunder, the Spurs, the Jazz, and the Clippers are all 42 and 30, and with all of the tie-breaking matchups and everything, that makes the Jazz the 7th seed. But I would say that the Thunder have really been falling off lately. I think they're going to drop down to the 7th, maybe even the 8th seed. I think the way they've been skidding, they could really fall all the way to 8th. And, well, who am I kidding? If they lose and the next 3 teams win, they're the 8th seed.
Right.
Spurs been playing really well. They won 9 games in a row. They did finally get a loss, but, you know, that's a hot team. Jazz are doing all right. They had that 5-game win streak. Then they drop one to Atlanta, and you know, right there is the Clippers, and they've won 8 of the last 10. So this is tight all the way around. And when you think about the Clippers, I mean, at the trade deadline, when they trade away Tobias Harris, you think this is a team that's looking to tank, but Doc Rivers is going to coach to win, and here they are with the same record as the Jazz. I did not see that one coming.
So I have a question. Why are the Spurs ahead of the Jazz? I thought the head-to-head, the Jazz owned that series 2-1.
I'm guessing that with all the rules of tiebreakers across conferences and everything, maybe, no, this isn't alphabetical. That just shows that's how it is. Conference.
It must be conference record. San Antonio is 29 and 25 and 20.
Spurs have a terrific conference record.
Well, here's a crazy thing. I'm looking at this. The Spurs also have the worst road record of any team in the conference playoff West.
Yep.
They're 13-22 on the road. The Jazz are 19-18. And really, outside of Golden State, every other team is within one or two games of 500 on the road, other than, you know, Golden State and San Antonio being the anomaly. That's insane.
Does that even look at Denver's home record? 30-6.
Yeah. And then you look at Golden State at 25-10, and it puts the Jazz's perspective of 23-12 not all that bad.
Let me look at Denver again. Do they just have a lot of home games to go or something? No, they've got a lot of road. They've only got 5 home games left and 7 road games. Okay, so they've played 2 fewer games than the Jazz. So they've got 7 road games, 5 home games. Most of their road games are tough. They have Knicks and they have Pacers. I expect them to take care of those two. But their other remaining road games are Houston, Oklahoma City, Golden State, Portland, and Utah.
And that Golden State's going to be big. That might decide the number one seed.
That can be it right there. Or, no. I mean, honestly, looking at this, I could see Denver losing, like, probably 4 more times the rest of the season. And then Warriors probably finish like 2 games ahead, so it won't matter.
Right. So, and if the Nuggets win 4 more times in the loss column, that only puts them one ahead of Houston. That's tight down the stretch. It really is. The West is so much fun. It's the Wild West.
Yeah.
So, all right. I can't think of other NBA things. Oh, wait, yes. There is NBA news that we haven't touched on.
Okay.
Jimmer's back in the NBA.
Yep. It was Phoenix the rest of the way with an option for next year. Probably a good spot for him. Just get on a lottery team, put up some good numbers, see how that all works out. Kelly
play for
Oubre
Coach
is
Kokoshkov
out the rest of the year. So, yeah, play for Igor.
Yep.
That ought to be a good test. I did just notice injuries. Kelly Oubre is out for the rest of the year for the Suns. Derrick Rose is out for the rest of the year with the Timberwolves. Trying to think if there were any others. And then the Bucks, they lost Malcolm Brogdon for the rest of the regular season. I don't know if he's missing the playoffs too, but they were looking at picking up a free agent. I'm trying to remember who they signed. I feel like they signed somebody because Brogdon's out.
Right.
So, you know, that's pretty big for them.
Well, and in reading the story about Jimmer, it seems the Suns are not happy with one of their guys that they do have, and I can't remember the name, and so they're feeling maybe Jimmer will give them a lift at that spot where this guy hasn't played so well. But, John, the name escapes me. But his first game, Jimmer's first game, will be in Salt Lake on Monday.
See, who are the guards on Phoenix? Let's look at that. Let's see if we can remember.
I was looking at the article.
I know
the other
Josh
day.
Jackson's been playing bad, but I don't know.
Yeah,
if he's
but that wasn't
they're
him.
Worried about. Let's see. I don't think it would have been Tyler Johnson.
No.
I don't know. Okobo? Are they...
No. Gosh, what am I thinking of? There's a guy... Oh, shoot. Wish I could remember. Oh, shoot.
Troy Daniels? I don't know.
Yeah, that was Troy Daniels. That's who it was. I think they mentioned that... The article I read, I think they mentioned they haven't been very happy with Troy Daniels' play of late. And so this might be a little pick-me-up. Albeit, I mean, 10 games left in the season. How much can Jimmer really do for them? Probably maybe secure himself a spot on the team next year? Maybe Igor likes him enough? I don't know.
Yeah, that really feels like an audition for next year.
Yeah.
Phoenix doesn't have a whole lot of guys that I'm trying to remember their contract situation. It's like most of the guys who are free agents in Phoenix are either not going to be wanted back or don't want to come back because Phoenix has just been bad forever. They've waived a lot of guys.
They have. And Jimmer's deal is a 2-year deal, although it is a team option for next year. So, I mean, if they decide they like him, they'll pick up his option in the summertime.
Yeah, here's Phoenix's – where's Devin Booker? Oh, there he is. So next year, Devin Booker begins his max contract, and you also have under contract Mikal Bridges. I don't know if that's how you say it. Josh Jackson, DeAndre Ayton, TJ Warren. Tyler Johnson has a $19 million player option, which I imagine he would pick up his money.
Yes.
And then Oubre Okabu. But a lot of these other guys are going to be gone. They have – Drogdon Bender has been a disappointment. They probably let him go. Troy Daniels will walk. Jamal Crawford will walk. And listen to all these guys they've waived. Tyson Chandler, Austin Rivers, Daryl Arthur, Wayne Ellington, Devin Reed, Isaiah Kanan, Eric Moreland, Quincy Acey, bunch of guys. So yeah, they just like, yeah, we'll go ahead and eat all that salary. It doesn't matter if you're under contract or not. They'll have a ton of cap space next year, but they need to win first before they become an ideal destination. So getting Jimmer now, get him in the 10 games now. They know Troy Daniels won't be back. And if he puts up gaudy numbers and he looks great to go ahead and keep next year, then great. You have yourself a high-volume bench scorer. And I would imagine at this point he would be an upgrade over Jamal Crawford, too.
I would agree with that, but Crawford's getting old. He's not what he used to be.
Nope.
So, all right. Well, I think that's it for NBA news and notes. Let's go ahead and move on. You wanted to talk March Madness.
I did. I actually didn't get my bracket finished in time for the Jedis and Germs route. I went to go finish it, and they said tip-off already happened and it's closed. I'm like, no! So I just finished it on my own anyway, and I'm looking at it. How closely have you watched so far? Did anything surprise you?
I haven't watched any at all. I have not kept up on it. I feel bad, too. Devin starts the Jedi and Germs bracket, and the two of the guys don't even do it because I didn't do it this year. I didn't join in, so you and I aren't in there. But I did not do a bracket, and I haven't watched any of the games. I hear Baylor had quite themselves a win yesterday.
Yeah, I'm feeling pretty good. I mean, I don't usually do this well this early. I've been able to call most of the upsets. I did not get Florida over Nevada. But I did pick Baylor. I did pick Murray State. And then most of the ones who are favored did win. And I decided I was just going to go ahead and be conservative this year. Although that screwed me last year because my one seed got knocked out the first round. But so far this year, it's been a little more predictable.
How much of an upset was that Baylor game? What was the seeding there?
Not much. It was an 8-9 seed.
Oh, okay. All right.
No, I just.
And I did pick. Has Washington played yet? Let's see. No, that's. I picked that 9 seed to win as well. So we'll see what happens.
So what have we got on tap today? We got the early games. Looks like they're Gardner-Webb versus Virginia, Colgate, Tennessee, UC Irvine, Kansas State. Kentucky, Texas Tech, Oklahoma, and Ole Miss, and Iowa, Cincinnati. You expect any upsets today?
Let's see. I picked ASU to upset Buffalo, so I'll be watching for that one. And what else is today? I think...
Oh, sorry, I didn't get down the rest. Oregon, Wisconsin, Washington, and Utah State. Who'd you pick in that game?
Washington.
What? You picked against the Aggies? That's it, John.
Yeah, I did. I just think Washington's been good enough that I see them winning that one.
All right. What about that interesting matchup? I like this one. 8-9 VCU and UCF. Who do you got in that one?
I picked VCU.
Okay. Yeah, it doesn't look like we should expect many upsets today, but I don't know. You never know in the first rounds of March Madness. It's crazy.
So that's a look at that. Yeah. Next week there will be a lot more results. We'll be down some, and then we'll see how we're doing. But none of the big seeds have been knocked off. The ones and twos and threes and fours that have played so far have all won. Let me just double check here to make sure. Yeah. So.
Right.
The biggest upset ranking wise so far was Murray State against Marquette, and I picked Murray State because Jaw is supposed to be such a good rookie prospect for the draft that I figured they would get that upset.
And they did. Sorry, Ryder Waldron, my co-host for Idiots Array. He's a Marquette grad. Sorry, Marquette had to lose that game. I know you were rooting for him, so. all right, well, that'll do it for March Madness. And short show this week. Let's drop to our final topic of the morning, and that is pop culture. And we have been waiting. We wanted to talk Captain Marvel. Why don't you go through your review of Captain Marvel?
Yes. Captain Marvel. I found it. I liked it. I would say I'd put it somewhere in the middle of the Marvel movies. I haven't sat back and ranked all 21, but that's my feeling right now, now that I'm a few days away from it. I really liked how when it's an original story, when it's an original origin story, I like that this one actually took some twists that I wasn't really anticipating or expecting. So I appreciated that. A lot of what I liked was Samuel L. Jackson as a young Nick Fury. He just seemed to have a lot of fun in that role, and it was just fun to see Fury as a younger, like, more naive, playful type agent, because he just has to be like the stoic boss in all the Avengers movies. But so it was cool to see him developed a little more there. I really liked Ben Mendelsohn as Talos. Ben Mendelsohn, he just seems to play villains like four or five movies a year. And this one, at first I was worried he was going to be another cardboard villain, but he had a lot of depth to him, which I liked. Brie Larson, there were times where I really enjoyed her, and there were other times where I felt she was lacking. So overall, I was fine with her, but she didn't like... She didn't wow me like Gal Gadot from Wonder Woman is just oozing charisma all over the place, and you just love her. And Brie Larson wasn't quite able to pull that off, I thought, with Captain Marvel. I think overall she was good, but not my favorite. And I compared it to – I put her on about level as Black Widow and Wasp as far as how interesting she was. But I really liked the way she was written. I thought the character was really well written, and so that's where I kind of on it.
How much of your might have something to do with directing?
Say that again?
With directing.
Oh, the director? I don't know. Hard to say. It was a directing duo, and I'm trying to remember their previous experience. This was like their first big movie. They'd done some indies. And I don't know how much I would pin on them. Because I thought a lot of the action stuff I thought worked really well. Like at the beginning when she has those things on her hands and she's kind of limited in her fighting, I loved that whole scene. I liked the battle that had the music cue that started with No Doubt. That made me laugh when it started, and I thought that was a pretty cool scene. And I also liked the scenes. I thought Larson and Jackson together had pretty good chemistry. So, I don't know. Maybe it's just because they get along and Jackson was able to elevate her game. There were just some times where it just didn't quite work for me with what she was doing.
Okay. And also, I got to give props. The way they worked the CGI and makeup, I would imagine it was both, to make Samuel L. Jackson look 25 years younger.
Yeah. Yeah, chronologically, these events took place 13 years before the first Iron Man. They did a little bit of fudging with timeline, because in the first Avengers, we learned that the S.H.I.E.L.D. had started doing all of this outer space monitoring because of Thor, and now we learn that actually they started doing it because of Captain Marvel. But maybe Nick Fury doesn't want anyone else to know about Captain Marvel. Maybe it was classified and that's why he just never brought her up before. So they can, I mean, I guess you can just wave that away with a screenwriting wand.
Yeah, I think so. No, overall I enjoyed this film. I thought it was fantastic. It was entertaining. I think my whole family enjoyed it. And you're right. There might have been some inconsistencies in stories, but overall, I thought it played well into the entire story arc and storyline and the timeline pretty snugly, I think.
Yeah.
So, what did you think of the post or the credit scenes? There was those two scenes at the end. Nothing to be too excited of. The one was a setup for Endgame. The other was a kind of a funny one. I don't even know how to describe it.
I think the last couple Marvel movies have been like that, where the mid-credit scene is the one where we're like, this is going to go into the next one. And then, like, the final one's usually just for laughs. And, yeah, it was good. I liked the mid-credit scene.
Yes.
Nothing like surprising or anything. I mean, I figured that had to happen, but it was just cool to watch it. And then the final scene is funny.
Well, and if you've seen Infinity War, we're not going to spoil it. But if you've seen Infinity War, the end, the mid credit scene ties up nicely to the very end. Actually, the end credit scene of
Infinity War.
So if you didn't watch the end post credit scene in Infinity War, then this one might not make sense. So. It's interesting they tie two credit scenes together rather than the movies themselves. It was kind of funny.
Yeah, that's a good point.
So, overall, it was, like I said, entertaining movie. I had laughs and really liked it. And the soundtrack, John, we're reliving our 90s all over again with that soundtrack. Fantastic. Garbage, Nirvana, No Doubt, I'm trying to go down the list here and remember everybody that was in there. REM?
Yeah, there were some good ones in there. I should emphasize that. I loved that it took place in the 90s and how much fun they had with that.
Yeah.
With the music cues and anything with technology, with internet speed and slow downloads and all that stuff was funny to me. So I liked all that stuff. That was clever. I liked that they had her crash land in a Blockbuster.
Yeah. Yes, and the fact that there was a heavy usage of pagers in this film, Samuel L. Jackson using a pager back when phones were very early on. We didn't see much of them, so it was entertaining too. So, yeah, definitely a must see. Everybody, go see it. And if you haven't seen Infinity Wars, take some time to see that in the post credit scenes. Tie it all together. I think this is a great setup for Endgame. I really do. And I think that's why they released it in the timeline the way that they did right now. It's a perfect setup for Endgame.
Yep.
So. All right. Anything else on the docket this week? I can't.
Oh, I wanted to ask you, did you ever watch any episodes of Love, Death, and the Robots?
No. After you mentioned it. And you mentioned I'm going to share with folks what you said in message. You felt dirty after you watched it.
The first three, yeah. But I've watched about 11 since, and Some of them are really good. Okay. But we can talk about it more when Devin's here, because I know he's watched some as well. Yeah, they're... yeah, some of them are kind of... about half of them have... I mean, they're... For people who don't know, it's an animated anthology series, so it's kind of like Black Mirror, except that it's animated, so all of the episodes are really only like 10 or 15 minutes long, and they're different animation styles, and taken as a whole, I am finding it really cool. It took me a bit to get used to what it was doing because, you know, most of them have F words and pretty violent and gory, and most of them have sex scenes in them, and so like the first, after I got done watching the first three, I did feel kind of dirty. I was like, man, are they all going to be like this? They're not all like that, but it is very creative and clever with the stories that they're telling.
Well, I've been teetering on it, and I watched the trailers the other day and thought maybe I wasn't interested, judging by your early reviews. But if you're saying that it gets better, maybe I will plop down and spend some time in it.
I think, yeah, maybe I'll just send you like certain episodes to try, and then you can decide if you want to watch more.
Okay.
In fact, the yogurt one's only like 5 minutes long. Why don't you watch that one and then...
Okay.
Watch that one, and then the second one is called Three Robots. So between those two, that'll kind of give you a flavor, and then you can decide if you want to watch maybe some of the darker ones.
Okay. I'll have to check those out. And you said they're real quick episodes anyway, so it shouldn't take me too long.
Yeah.
So I want to get into The Order, because I'd like to talk about that on here too. I've heard very good things about The Order, and I still need to watch Umbrella Man or The Umbrella Academy. And those are still on my list, and I've kind of started them, but I haven't gotten into them very far. Mm. So, all right. Well, I think that wraps it. There's nothing else this week, right?
Yep. I think we're good.
All right. Well, thank you all for joining us on this week's edition of Jedi and Germs. Devin, we miss you. Folks, we apologize if things are a little rough this week, too. We're using a different format because of no Devin. But we'll hope to catch Devin next week. Thank you for joining us. Leave us a review. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter. And share with your friends and family. Share with everybody on social media. Get the word out to check out Jedi and Germs. Thank you all. We'll talk to you real soon. John, take us out.
Bye, everybody.